Hello to all my Kelly Ripa fans. It's Beautiful Anonymous. 1 hour, one phone call, no names, no holds barred.
I'd rather go one-on-one. I think it'll be more fun, and I'll get to know you, and you'll get to know me.
Hey, New Yorkers, I want to let you know, I got a show coming up. I'm actually excited about it. If you don't have plans on New Year's Eve, I'm doing a thing. I'm doing a show in Brooklyn, 7 p.m. on New Year's Eve. It'll be done by 9, hard curfew. And I'm doing it specifically because I'm a new parent. I don't stay up till midnight. And I was thinking, hey, maybe if you're someone who doesn't want to stay up till midnight, but you still want to do something fun on New Year's Eve, you come out, you see this show. It's going to be stand-up. I'm going to be getting a bunch of great people on it. And you're home by 9:30. You're home by 10 o'clock. Go get your tickets at chrisgeth.com. Beautiful follow-ups. Our follow-up series, it's on Stitcher Premium right now. Use the code STORIES. You get a free month of Stitcher Premium. You can check them all out. This past Friday, we talked to House Burned Down. Remember Cedric the Donkey? Talk to her, see how she's doing. See if she has a house now. See how the donkey's doing. And this upcoming Friday, we hear from Out of the Closet. This was the caller who had committed to coming out of the closet, but had not yet done so. So a lot of people are going to want to hear how he's doing. So check out follow-ups. This week's call, public school teacher from New Jersey. So you know right away the New Jersey stuff right there. I got enough to talk about for an hour. But we focus a lot on the state of public schools, what it's like to be in there as a teacher, what the frustrations are, about all sorts of stuff that swirls around being a school teacher. I want to just say at the top, the caller immediately starts telling me, I know you hate school. You tell people to drop out of school. You hated public school. And I want to say, I say it in the course of the call, but I'm older and wiser now, and I phrase that in smarter ways. I also, just in the spirit of what this call is, I just want to say, I had a teacher in my public high school who actually did change my life. Her name's Melissa Blevins, and she was the drama teacher in my school, and she told me to take her class when I was a junior. She said, next year you're taking this drama class. I said, I don't know. She'd made it all about doing improv, and she specifically made a point of telling me that I was funny, and maybe if I didn't spend so much time being a wise ass, that was actually an asset instead of a drawback. Instead of everybody else rolling their eyes at me for trying to be funny, she told me it actually was a skill. And I think I'm one of the few people in the world who got to live his dreams, and I owe a lot of that to her. So there's a shout out to public school and a public school teacher. Anyway, this caller is one of the good ones as well. I think you're going to hear that. Fighting hard for the right reasons and tells us all about what it's like in this world that we all know about. Enjoy the call.
Thank you for calling Beautiful Anonymous. A beeping noise will indicate when you are on the show with the host.
Hello?
Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
How am I? Well, I'll tell you very honestly, I booked some acting work, which is always nice. And it's for a thing I can't talk about, but that I'm pretty excited about. But they keep bringing me out to Los Angeles. And since I'm a maniac, I keep saying I would love to do this, but I need to get back to New York as quickly as possible. So I keep flying out to Los Angeles one day at a time and flying back on red eyes. So I took a red eye last night.
And oh my!
Half dead. But that's okay. That's good. That's a good reason to be that tired, is because I'm working and it's all through the union, so it counts towards my health insurance. This is good stuff.
Oh, that's good.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm a little, I echo your half-deadness a little bit. I'm actually just, I was putting up projects in a display case downstairs while I was on hold, and I just walked up 4 flights of stairs so that I could get to my my classroom. Yes.
I was wondering what you meant when you said you're putting projects in a display case. That's a very specific thing to say.
Yes. My students had, my students had their project due this week, so we had to put them in the display cases downstairs, and you know, it's always what you want to be doing after school on at 4:30 on a Friday.
Right.
So, yeah, it's all good. But I do have to say I am a New Jersey public school teacher. So
God bless
you. Every time you talk about school, I'm like, I'm sorry, Chris.
No, I mean, listen, but, I mean, that's college. And I'd like to think that as I mature, and I should have been more mature than this in my 30s. But I think that, again, to reiterate where I stand now before my mom and my wife yell at me and say, stop telling children to not go to college. I just think if you don't have specific goals in mind, maybe take a gap year and think about if you want to get six figures in debt. Because very often I have found in the real world that nobody even asks where you went to school or if you even have a college degree. But that's just me. But if you want to be a teacher, yes. What's that?
I completely echo what you just said. Completely. Because as a public school teacher, you know, this is my seventh year. And, I'm still paying and I'll be paying for a long time. And I'm in the best position that one can be. And I got a job right out of college, in the field that I want to work in. And, you know, it's hard. It's hard to do that and to start off your life with so much debt is a very daunting thing to do. I tell my students, I mean, I teach elementary school, so they don't really have a concept of, you know, high school even, but, you know, I do tell them school is very important, but it is important to make sure that you have a plan and you know what you want. And if you don't, then college is not like the only choice that you have. You do have other choices in life, and you know, you have to be smart about your decision making.
I would like to think so. And I think I'm sure this is nationwide, but I know in New Jersey too, like I had a friend who taught in one of the best public high schools in the state. Milburn, I'm sure you might. Milburn's like one of the best public schools in the country, they say.
Absolutely.
And I'm not trying to slam Milburn, and I'm not trying to out this person I know who worked in that school system, but this friend of mine left because there was so much pressure on the teachers and the kids and the parents that it was a system where someone got a B, parent-teacher meeting. Because there's so much pressure on people and so much asking our kids to define themselves through the grades they get. But I don't know if that always coincides with asking them to define themselves based on the people they are and the values they have. And I don't know if it prioritizes happiness. And I think it makes people feel like accomplishment is the only pathway to success or happiness. And that bothers me. I will say that bothers me.
Yes, I agree.
But I don't blame you.
It bothers me too, because thank you. I appreciate that because, you know, some people do, but I think the test scores are very that is probably the most, I don't want to say the most frustrating. There are a lot of frustrating things, and there are a lot of amazing, wonderful things about teaching that I love and that are really you know, I wouldn't trade it. You don't get it in other jobs, this sense of fulfillment that I get. But I think the focus on test scores and the fact that, you know, not only are these students, I mean, I teach nine-year-olds. Not only are nine-year-olds held to this, like, standard of, you know, this ridiculous standard, but their teachers are too. And, you know, there are a lot of factors that come into play when a kid comes in and takes the test, whether it's the standardized test or whether it's an assessment that you're giving on any given day. You know, it could be you don't know what they went through that morning at home. You don't know whether they're feeling okay, whether they had breakfast, whether, you know, they had a fight with their parents. I mean, there are like a thousand things, just like for teachers, there are so many things that go into our lives before we get to school and affect our performance. And I think that there's this huge focus on data in education, which I think, you know, data has a place, but it's a very human job. It's a job where you get to connect with people and you get to, I interact with these students. They're in my classroom all day for 6 hours, for 5 days a week. That's an opportunity for a connection that you can't quantify with a number. So it's hard, I think. And there are teachers that are on the data wagon, and I understand that. And I love data just as much as the next person, but I think, to have it be the only focus is kind of dangerous, because I think we have a very, unique opportunity to influence the next generation. And obviously I listen to your show, so I have a big focus on empathy and human, you know, connecting to a little human and influencing their lives in a positive way. And I think that's more important for me, to be honest with you. I think it's more important for me to make sure that they know that they have a safe space, that they can talk to me about anything, that we can work out problems. And creating that environment is more important to me than how they do on a test. But it's interesting. It's an interesting environment to try to make that happen when, you know, your evaluation is based on how they do on a test at the end of the year.
Well, you sound like one of the good ones.
Thank you. Thanks. I mean, I try. I really do try, but, it's not easy. I'm trying to be the best human that I can be. But also the environment in my school is not the greatest at the moment. I don't want to say too much, but it's that's hard, you know, when you don't feel supported and you don't feel like everybody's working as a team. It can be a really difficult thing, with all of the other pressures. So anyway.
Now, I want to say this data obsession, as you pointed out with education,
mm-hmm.
I feel like this is kind of like a societal thing, right? Like the amount, I know a lot of people who work as like writers, and we all know this from Facebook. There's times where like these people have to crank out 10 articles a day for websites. You can't write 10 good things a day. And it's all because they just want the clicks. They want the data. And that's how I wind up clicking on something. It'll be like a Star Wars headline where I'm like, oh, I love Star Wars. I grew up on Star Wars. And then you click on it and you're like, I just spent 3 minutes reading a thing that basically says, oh, Star Wars is a movie that exists. So I'm like, what is this? Sports, same thing. I can't watch baseball anymore. I grew up, I loved the Yankees. You know, I'm in North Jersey. You love the Yankees. Mm-hmm. If you're in South Jersey, you love the Phillies.
Course.
I don't know if you're a Yankee or a Philly fan. Nobody in Jersey really likes the Mets. Some people do. You're a Yankee fan.
True.
Okay.
No Mets. I am a Yankees fan.
So I okay.
I'm from North Jersey.
That's great. I love that. Baseball now, everything's
the
like, oh, this person's warp is this. Oh, the VoIP over, under, it's like, stop rambling about random numbers. I just want to see somebody, if somebody can like steal a base or hit a double or get a home run or if a pitcher's on fire. I don't want all the commentary to be like, well, when you factor in this person's replacement rate over, same thing with basketball. Oh, the plus minus over unders, this and that. It's like, whatever happened to the old days where you just wanted to see Starks hit a three and Oakley put someone on their ass and that's why you watched it? Because fun.
Uh-huh.
Data. Not into data. Now, you were mentioning a lot of pressure for teachers, public school teachers. We know this. Let's get into a topic that I think is very on the surface that I would love to hear a public school teacher talk about. You face all this pressure.
Okay.
You got to get all these test scores up, even for 9-year-olds. You got the administration keeping an eye on everything. You got parents who are mad. You got kids who might have emotional problems, developmental problems, especially teaching nine-year-olds. I want to talk about that later, too. That's a weird age, because some of these kids may be...
Yeah.
Maybe they're still kind of mentally six-year-olds, and then some of them... My best friend Anthony started growing a mustache in fourth grade. I was like, whoa. You know, it's like, you see these kids, weird window.
It's, yeah.
That's
every
insane.
One of my conferences, I open it up with, this is the biggest transitional year in every single way.
I can't imagine.
Just be prepared. Because,
yeah.
I mean, it's like emotionally, physically, academically, literally everything happens in the fourth grade, or starts to happen. I don't want to say it happens, because it doesn't for everybody, but you see it, and then half of your class is growing mustaches, and then half of your class is like crying because they didn't get a turn during Simon Says or whatever, and it's like, what? It's a lot to manage. It is a lot to manage.
You got one kid who's like, I did poopy. And then the next kid, you're like, this kid already knows calculus. What is? And maybe they're the same kid.
Yes.
You're like, what?
Yep.
What is going on?
And it is different. I don't know how it was in your school growing up, but in my school growing up, we were tracked, and they had like high, middle, and low classes, homogeneous grouping for like the core subjects for math and ELA. And now we have heterogeneous grouping, which means that in my classroom, I have all three levels all the time, all day, which there are pros and cons to both. I don't want to say, one is better than the other. But it is, there's a lot going on at any given time. So, it's a lot to manage. It's kind of crazy.
And
like, I'll get to like, oh, sorry, go ahead.
No. And you'll get to what?
Oh, no, I'll get to, like, lunchtime. And, like, I love my friends. But, like, I have two friends in, like, a group chat from high school. And I'll get to lunch, and I won't even know where my phone is. And I'll have, like, 37 messages from my friends with, like, office jobs who, like, can be on their phone, and they're just texting each other. And I'm like, oh, my God, like, I can't even look at anything. I just need like quiet, and I'm going to read my book, and I'm going to eat my lunch, and I'm going to make my copies, and maybe I'll tackle that at a later time. Because that's also a thing, like I don't even know where my phone is during the day. So it's a three-ring circus for sure.
So you're dealing with this three-ring circus: parents, administration, test scores, all sorts of education philosophies that change on the state's whim. You got kids who are emotionally surging in different directions. Let's not forget, you're waking up at 5:30, 6 in the morning every day. It affects your...
Literally, yep.
Yeah, you're physically exhausted. Everybody else gets to go out for a drink. You just got to go collapse at home. It affects your personal life. Like you said, your friends, you don't get to interact with them. Your dating life, I'm sure. And all that, and they basically pay you a salary that's like a high five and an Applebee's gift certificate. How do you feel about this?
And the best, and teachers will jump all over this. And then they're like, everybody gets excited when you can wear jeans on Friday.
Ooh.
Like, we get to wear jeans tomorrow. And oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's... But I have to say, it does. It's something that you sign up for. You know, going in, that like all of this stuff is the way it is. I will say also, you don't even know until you experience it. You don't even know. It's like the difference between like when you get your permit and you're driving with your parents, and then like you learn more on that first day of having your license and driving by yourself, where you're like, oh, too close to the curb there, that is what teaching is like. It's just like you jump into the deep end and you kind of handle things like a minute at a time, because you have to. There's nothing that can prepare you for it.
And then they say, education's the most important thing. Education's the most important thing. And hey, the people who are your children's guides through education, we pay you pennies on the dollar, and you might need to pick up a side gig on the weekend. And we want to break your union on top of that. And we want to destroy your union. And and there's all this smear campaign against your union. All this stuff.
Yeah.
They don't like the teachers'
unions.
You get
it. No, they don't.
It's like, what do we want? We're paying teachers, what, like $30,000 a year to take care of our kids? Is it more than that? It's got to be more than that now, right?
It's more than that. Yeah, but so we have like an increase in pay, but now with Chapter 78 in New Jersey, you have to pay an enormous amount of your health care. So like that's been something that's like been really, it really has affected people's salaries more than anything else. It has been the health care, because and health care is expensive for everybody. It would be nice. It would be nice to move out of my parents' house, but not really feasible for me at the moment.
You said you've been teaching for 7 years.
Yeah.
So this is.
Yeah. Well.
And I'm not judging at all, but
loans and okay, judge.
No, not judging, but for everybody listening out there,
I know you.
If you've ever been at a dinner table conversation, when you've started going, oh, this teacher's union is the problem. Think about this. This means you're in your late 20s. You're teaching our kids.
Yes.
You're busting your ass. You're living with your folks. And you just said part of that is the pay issue. That's not okay with me. That's not okay. Not when someone's job can be, when someone's like, I find poor families whose homes are being foreclosed on, and then I flip the homes after they go bankrupt. And those people can be millionaires, and that's fine.
Yeah.
That's fine in a capitalist society. But what's not fine with me is that you're sitting here saying, I'd love to move out of my parents' house, but between my student loans and my health insurance and the teacher pay rate, I can't. That's the part that's not okay.
Yeah. Yep.
Guys, let's go ahead and pause the show. I think a lot of us might agree with what I just went on. Capitalism has a dark side. Some might say capitalism is a disease. Anyway, we've got a lot of products and services that our sponsors like to bring you, advertisers. Hey, guys, check it out. Participate in the capitalist system. Use the promo codes when you do. It really helps the show. We'll be right back. Thanks to all of our advertisers. Now let's get back to the conversation. But between my student loans and my health insurance and the teacher pay rate, I can't. That's the part that's not okay.
Yeah. Yep. I know. But also, it is also North Jersey. Rent is just astronomical.
It is. It is. I'm looking into moving back there. You'll love this. Okay. First thing I want to say is I knew you were from North Jersey. I knew you weren't just someone working in New Jersey, but that you grew up there. Because you don't have much of an accent, but the way you say the word very, the way you say V-E-R-Y, that's when I was like, yep, very. It's very.
Very.
And how do you say H? And maybe you don't say it, but how did we grow up saying horrible?
Horrible. Every time you imitate your mom, I'm like, oh my gosh, we do say that.
Horrible, terrible, coffee, dog,
horrible.
Nork. It's Nork, N-O-R-K, Nork.
Anyway, I know. It's so ridiculous.
Now, I'm telling you, I have my son now. I don't want to be raising this kid in the city.
He's so cute, by the way.
Thank
so
you.
Cute.
I love him. Everybody tells me he should be the next Gerber baby. This kid's cute.
Seriously.
Thank you.
His dimples. I can't get over them.
Everybody loves his dimples and his long eyelashes. And everybody thinks he's a girl because of his beautiful eyelashes. Which is such a weird thing to say and be proud of. No, it's not. He's beautiful in every way.
That is a weird.
Now, you were saying North Jersey. We're thinking of moving back there. because I was on the subway 3 days ago with a subway masturbator at 2 in the afternoon. I'm like, and no one even stopped. None of us even stopped him. He was keeping it in his pants. Uh-huh. His hand was in his pants. He didn't take it out. And everyone was like, that's where my humanity has come to, where it's just, we're all on a train. Like, as long as you don't take it out, buddy, just finish fast. Like, I can't be in this city anymore. But my dad says to me, he goes, hey, I spent my whole life escaping those Essex County taxes. You better not go back to that. Everybody wants to move to Maplewood these days. I can't go pay 20 grand in taxes.
Mm-hmm. I know. My sister, I have to say, my sister just moved to West Orange and her taxes are nuts.
Nuts in there, my old hometown.
Because of the access to the city. Everybody's moving out of the city into Essex County because it's on that train line.
Montclair, maybe. But I hear West Orange is like becoming a cool spot now, which is astounding to me as someone who grew up there. It's not even on the train line.
Yeah.
It's like in between the towns on the train lines.
You know, you take the jitney to South Orange.
Yeah, they didn't have the jitney when I got. I heard about this jitney. And I heard they turned the old Thomas Edison factories into like high-class condo lofts, which is insane. Because this was giant abandoned factories. My mom actually grew up on a block that was, her house was demolished to expand the factories. And that was a rough and tumble part of town. Sometimes people will tell me now, and I'm on a tangent, people tell me like, oh, you talk about West Orange like it's a tough place. That's like a rich town. And I'm like, maybe it is now. But you know what? Let's talk about this, actually.
Okay.
This is half a teaching thing and half a Jersey thing right here. Jersey is the most densely populated state. I want you to, I would never ask you what district you're in. I know that that's a big no-no. I know that's a big no-no. But can you speak to the fact of how weird is it in New Jersey that you might be in one town in a public school that has the highest rating, like Millburn, I mentioned, one of the highest rated public schools in the country. But then you might also know the reputation. The high school I went to, West Orange High, decent, but not a great reputation. Columbia High, where all the all these people moved to Maplewood, all these new, like, all the Brooklyn money's going out there. That high school is not known as being, it was always known growing up, a little bit of a tough school.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like a 5-minute drive apart, even in West Orange. Like, there are really, you might go to a school in one part of town where the elementary school is really nice, but the Washington school.
Yep.
I grew up my first house was down the block from Washington School. My brother went there till third grade. That school was built in, I think, the 1800s, and there's trailers, classrooms, and the parking lot. And some kids in some neighborhoods have it great, and some kids don't. And Jersey, it's like this. These towns next to each other where some of them are rough and tumble, and then you're right next to real wealth and affluence.
Literally.
Talk about this. Yep. I don't know what kind of school you're in, how much of these class crossovers you see, but it's a very, very interesting part of life in general. And in Jersey, since it's so dense, you see it really up close.
Yes, and because there's so many small towns. There's so many small towns that are really close together. And so you go from one to the other and you're like, it's a huge difference. I even see it in my town, which is a small town, and it's like you go from, and it's small, I mean, like maybe 2 square miles, and you go from one side of the town to the other side of the town, and it's like, oh, like this is the same town? It's crazy. It's crazy. And there are, even it doesn't matter how big the district is. You could have a small town in New Jersey and have one side of town that has all of, you know, has, I hate to say it this way, but like the two family houses and people who are the low income housing, and all of that seems to be on one side of the town. And you have this huge dichotomy between the schools. And I mean, we see it in my district. I saw it in the town that I grew up in is, we only had one elementary, one middle school, but, it's in a lot of towns. And I think the answer, at least in some schools that I've seen, is a lot of districts are going to one, you know, kindergarten, first, second grade building, and then one third and fourth grade building, and then having a true middle school instead of having multiple elementaries and multiple middle schools. I think to kind of cut down on the differences between, you know, one side of town to the other.
That's
yeah,
really
there's a
interesting.
Lot of restructuring.
So they're trying to make sure all the kids from all areas of town meet each other early and have an equal experience from this. Because I tell you, and again, people sometimes roll their eyes so hard, but I'm 40. So I don't, like you're saying, a lot of the hipsters and whatnot moving out to my old hometown, that's great. I want to see the place doing good. But I'm telling you, there's two middle schools in my town, and I had a buddy who I went from kindergarten through college with, and we lived together 2 years in college, and we lived in the same neighborhood. And we lost touch, and about, I don't know, in our 30s, I tracked down his number. I actually called. I was like, I wonder if his mom still has the same phone number. And I called him and got his cell from her. And we met up at a bar in New York. He walks in. He goes, first thing out of his mouth, he goes, dude, Edison Middle School fucked up my whole life. First thing he said. It was like the fact that we went to going to the school on the rougher side of town. It was tough. And then you go to the high school and you see this all over New Jersey. High schools where there's kids who on their 17th birthday drive to school in a brand new BMW. And then they're in the same lunchroom with kids who are on food stamps. And neither lifestyle is right or wrong. But holy shit, is that a balancing act for people like you who are in the trenches? And sometimes the administrations don't want to necessarily deal with all the stuff that's happening and kids who have feelings sorting out. Anyway, I'm on a rant. You called it at the start. I was like, no, I have no problems with public schools. And now here I am like, oh, the class disparity, the 1%. We got to be throwing bricks through Occupy public schools. Anyway, it's up to you. You talk. I'm being
honest. I will be honest with you. Education is it's definitely one of those issues that I found there's nobody that's neutral on it.
Yeah.
There's nobody there are very few people who are neutral. You either have very, very strong feelings in support of public education and teachers and that whole thing, or you have a lot of resentment and not great feelings about public education. And it is, I think it's something that people feel like they know because they went through it, so they went through public school, and in my public school, this happened and these teachers did this. We watched movies all the time. And, now if we want to show an educational movie, I'm like freaked out. I have to have like 8 reasons why we're showing it, how it connects to what. And it's like, oh God, it can be an educational tool, but I think that there's this perception that we come in and, we don't feel like teaching, so we just throw in a movie. It's like, no, Bill Nye is actually the best, and I enjoy watching them because I learn a lot from him still.
Now, Bill Nye, sure. Now, let's talk, because a lot of people also have a problem with tenure, which I don't, is that only a college thing? I forget, because I'm old.
No, it's a thing. It's a thing.
Now, how do you respond? Like, I get it. Like, Bill Nye, sure, absolutely. But I distinctly remember taking a class on law where the teacher was tenured, and we watched The Shawshank Redemption in high school. And that movie's long.
I mean,
that ate up like a solid 3 or 4 days of class time. And I don't know if we learned much about law. And I don't know if he would have been showing that if it was his first handful of years teaching.
Exactly. Yes. I do understand that. And usually when people say that, I talk to friends that work in offices. Like, I just talked to my friend. She works at an office, and she was just like, I went in and no one's here. So I'm like getting a jump on my Christmas shopping. I'm like, oh, that's Like, people get to do that. Like, that's nice to not have to, you know, fit it in on, you know, like, schedule the time that I'm going to go Amazon Christmas shopping on my weekend between all of the other things that I have to do. Like, I think that that's in every industry. Sometimes, you know, you need a break. I get showing movies all the time, but I don't know anybody that shows movies all the time ever. I don't. It doesn't happen. At least not in my school. We're all working really hard.
Of course. And I'm bringing up the Shawshank thing mostly for a laugh, but I understand completely what you're saying. It's the type of thing people, but it's the thing that used to happen maybe. And I'm sitting here going, well, that happened when I was a kid. And I was in high school and I took that class in 1996. So what the hell do I know, really? You know?
I'm going to be honest. I'm not saying that there aren't bad teachers, because I know bad teachers too. And I'm not, I think it's hard because it's such a subjective thing. It's like my favorite teacher could have been somebody's worst teacher. You know, because you're dealing with humans. You're a human and you're dealing with humans. And as a teacher, you can't anticipate every interaction you're going to have with, you know, 20 students every single day and make sure that they're all positive, because you're a human yourself. I think you have to give, as a teacher, I mean, I know I have to give myself permission to be like, you know what? You've had a hard week. The kids have been working really hard. You can take a period and, you know, watch a movie. I don't think it's the, you know, the worst thing.
And if it has value, of course. You know, I'm not trying to make you defend yourself. I was just, it was a funny, real reference
to
my life. Let me ask
you. Yes, of course. I mean, and then that being said, I also had a criminology course in high school where we watched Seven. And I'm sure that's like all kinds of inappropriate. So,
and that teacher just needed a break. But you're clearly not
right.
You're on a Friday at 4:30 p.m. hanging up your kids' projects. Like, you're not someone, you are a person who values hard work and understands it in teaching. And I made you defend yourself. I feel bad. Now,
no, it's okay. That's all right. Now, listen, I got to be honest. We're used to it.
I'm sure.
Defending myself.
I'm sure.
I can't tell you how many times I've been at a bar and like my friend has to be like, we're going to have to leave if you can't like engage the guy next to you who's talking about like teacher pensions and tenure. And I'm like, yeah, no, we have to leave because I'm going to start something.
Right. And then you're like, listen, it's 6:30 p.m. I should be getting home anyway. I've got to grade papers and then be in bed in 45 minutes.
Yeah. Or pass out on the couch with the papers on the couch with you.
Oh, that's a sad moment when you wake up and you're like,
Yeah, it's like 2:45 in the morning, excuse me, and you're like, oh, I guess you got pen on your face and...
Now, you mentioned there's some bad teachers. I don't want you to speak specifically, like, pot shots at people, you know. What constitutes a bad teacher? I'll tell you what I look back on. I remember teachers, and some of them I liked in the moment, but the teachers who needed the kids to think they were cool, I look back, I'm like, that, all those people. Now that I'm 39 and I'm, like, older than a lot of the teachers, I'm like, anyone who needs, like, a 14-year-old to think you're cool... You're not a teacher. Yeah. I want my kid to be dealing with. That's my thing. I look back on it like weird. But okay, for you, what's a good teacher? What's a bad teacher?
Well, good and bad are such difficult words to use because, like I said, like I mean, I also had a teacher in middle school that literally just. She didn't like me because she didn't like my brother. And so she, like, I got in trouble all the time. And I was a huge people pleaser. And there was nothing that I could do.
You don't know how much we haven't come. Going through school, being the younger sibling of an older brother who fucked with teachers. My brother was such a wise ass. And the teachers
Yeah.
I had to prove to them, like, hey, I'm not.
Yeah, that's not me.
At least give me a chance.
Really? No. And I'm one of four.
Oh.
So I have two above me and one below me. So my younger brother really had to make a name for himself. Although I will say he likes to, he tells the story that he, based off of what teacher he was dealing with, he would tell them whose sibling he was. So, you know, if
smart.
They really liked that person. Yeah, he's very smart. He's very resourceful. Go ahead.
Before, I want you to tell me a good teacher, bad teacher, but I got a story for you that you're going to love.
Okay.
There's this teacher in my high school.
Okay.
Teacher in my high school who I actually liked a lot. And then one day she was very clearly having a bad day. And before school, in the hallway, she pulled me aside, started yelling at me about like an extracurricular club that she ran that I had been in and then had quit. Started really raising her voice. And I mean, it was before school. I was like, whoa, what is, like, immediately, even as a young kid, I was like, what is going on? Like, something's off. And I kept trying to walk away. And she's like, don't walk away from me. And now everybody's watching. And I was like, I'm not into it anymore. I want to quit. And she yells, this is what I expect from a Gethard. It's a reference to my older brother in front of all these people watching. And I just froze. And everybody watched. You felt all the kids. You know when kids like go from like, ooh, 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 to like, oh, mm-hmm. like something in a fight. That kids are saying is real. And I was real worked up. And I went back to my homeroom class and somebody asked me why I was so upset. And I ranted and raved. And then finally went to the office and she was going to get in a lot of trouble. The administration was like, that's not good. And then my homeroom teacher, I was a young man, surging with angry young man hormones. And in the course of me venting about it in my class, I said, and I apologize, I would never say this today. I said, I don't get it.
Uh-huh.
I don't get why she's being such a cunt. I don't get it. And I was an angry young man. We were raised in North Jersey where words are often said that are regrettable words. We grew up with a lot of regrettable. And they basically said, listen, if you don't get her in trouble for disparaging your family name, then we won't get you in trouble for dropping the C-bomb. But like you said, the younger brother.
Well,
anyway. And oh, here's the best part.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm doing my TV show. This is going to be a long tangent, and I'm eating up your time. I apologize, but I think you'll like this. So promoting my TV show, I get booked on the Kelly Ripa show. Everybody, we're going to pause. We're going to do some ads, but I'm telling you, if you're not going to want to turn this one off, because you're about to hear your boy Geth go off on a tale of revenge. I know that Kelly Ripa doesn't sound like it's going to lead to a revenge redemption tale, but it does. So come back for that and more. Thanks to all our advertisers. And now let's hear more from our teacher friend. Promoting my TV show, I get booked on the Kelly Ripa show. I'm like, what? This is like my mom's favorite show, Regis. This is the old Regis slut. So I go on the Kelly Ripa
that
show.
That was also a thing. Oh, Kelly Ripa.
I love
the
it.
The pride of North Jersey.
Absolutely. So I go on the show. I'm dancing with Kelly Ripa. I wear a little sweater and some nice pants. I charm her. She's so charming. So I get a message from my old history teacher who yelled at me. And she said, I can't believe you were on the Kelly Ripa show. And I said, I was so mad. Just reading her name. And I just said, yes, I was. Tried to make it clear. I'm in my 30s now. I don't need to bow down. And there's some bad feelings, but I wasn't going to vent it. And then she said something else. And she was clearly kind of poking the bear. And she was like, I wish I could remember what she said. But she was like, yeah, I have so many memories of you. And I was like, really? Was one of them the time you cornered me in a hallway and yelled, that's what I would expect from a Gethard in front of a hallway of my peers, making me feel ashamed for being from my own family? Is that one of your memories? And I typed that and sent it. She was like, wow, I shouldn't have done that. And I'm like, yeah, no, you shouldn't have. And then we just never messaged again.
You shouldn't have.
Never messaged again. Yeah. But I got my revenge in my 30s. I was able to say, hey, I'm a grown-up now. and I'm able to say this to you. Anyway.
Yeah. And I mean, listen, no, and those are the types of interactions that, like, you know, it what bothers me, I mean, the whole thing bothers me, the whole thing. But, like, the fact that she didn't even remember saying that, that's annoying.
Becoming, like, a D-list celebrity for a minute there, that's the thing. All of a sudden, you see people posting on Facebook, this kid's from my neighborhood, he's the pride of down the hill West Orange. I'm like, really? You beat the shit out of me in the Our Lady of Lourdes parking lot.
Yep.
And now you saw me you saw me on Conan and I'm the pride of your neighborhood? No. I see how this works. Anyway, what's a good teacher?
You don't get to do that.
No. Not to a Jersey kid. We hold grudges. Anyway, I've made it way too much about me. What's a good teacher? What's a bad teacher? What are the bullet points?
Well, for me, I believe that I think at least what I try to do with my students is connect with them and model being a good person, model being somebody who values learning, somebody who values hard work. Responsibility is a really big thing. Taking responsibility for your words and your actions and in an authentic way, and trying to create good people. And I think that, you know, when I look back when I was a student, the most impactful thing for me were the teachers that cared about me, especially coming from a big family. They knew my entire family, all of my teachers. Some of them had my mom when she went through the school system. So the teachers that took the time to get to know me as an individual outside of all of that and me as a learner and tried to really help me become a good person and to accept my mistakes and to kind of lift me up in that way. That's what made the most impact on me as a student. And so I try to do that for hold on one second. Can you come back? Thank you. Sorry.
No, you got teacher stuff
to do. The janitor just wanted to come in. No, he just tried to come in and clean my room.
Sorry, I'm on a podcast spilling the tea about the system.
You know, that's what I try to do. I try to be that person for them, and I try to, you know, just try to give them the tools that is going to allow them to be successful. And so I want them to be successful in life, whatever that means for them. And so, you know, I think that's what a good teacher is. I think that they recognize that these are human beings and that they have a very unique opportunity to touch a lot of lives. And the best thing is when students come back. You know, I'm in an elementary school. When students come back and they, you know, talk to you and they want to know your opinion and they want to get your advice. And for me, I can teach you about multiplication and I can teach you about all of those things. But after school is going to come to an end at some point and you're going to need a lot of life skills that are going to make you good humans and and you're going to form the world that I'm going to live in if I ever retire. So, that's my goal is to, you know, I think that that's a good teacher. Somebody who recognizes that you're working with children, that you have a unique opportunity to reach them in a way that no one else really has. And for me, that's a good teacher, because those were the good teachers when I went to school. Bad teachers, I don't know. The ones that those are the teachers that I gravitate towards as a professional. Those teachers that recognize that part of the job. Those are the teachers that I seek advice from. Those are the teachers that I gravitate towards. Bad teachers is a hard, because it's different for everybody, you know? But I think that the ones that frustrate me the most are the ones that like make sure that they look good in front of administration and they check all the boxes and the ones that kiss ass, basically. Sorry, Sally. And, you know, and then.
You don't have to apologize for ass. I recently said cunt, so you're good. She's already turned this one off as soon as she heard her youngest son say cunt. Jesus. Anyway, you're saying.
Now three times.
Yes, yes. Milking it hard now.
So, yeah, I mean, like, the ones that are just doing it for the show, and that really bugs me, because it's not always perfect. It's not always... it doesn't always look good. It doesn't always, it's very messy. And I think that it doesn't do us any favors when, you know, you try to make everything look perfect and you check all the boxes and, you know, have you really done your job? If I ask one of my kids, who is their, you know, who is your second grade teacher? And they're like, for me, that's the most important part of my job. And so, I don't know. And sometimes they're just not going to get what you're teaching them. They're just not. And it's okay. Like you say, you do walk around with the calculator all the time in your pocket. So, I mean, as long as I can teach you when to use the calculator appropriately.
That makes me so sad that you're quoting my anti-education rants from a different episode. Oh, no.
No, because it is true. No, because that's a common thing that people say, like, when am I going to use this? Why? And it's not about the... it's not about the using. It's not about the actually, you could, I use my calculator all the time, but you need to know when to use it. So if I can teach you that and I can teach you how to use it appropriately, then I think I've done my job.
Let me ask you this on that topic, because I've ranted about math before and you clearly heard it and I'm a little ashamed of that right now. But let me ask you this.
You should not be.
Well, it ties into a question that I think you'll have insight on, which is that, and I may have mentioned this on the show before, but I want to hear your opinion. I loved school. I loved school until fourth grade, which is very interesting to be talking to you. Because here's the thing. So third grade in West Orange, there is this thing called the high aptitude program, where like the really smart three, four, or five kids from each elementary school were sent to the Board of Education building to have like advanced classes. This is very elitist in a way that I look back on. I don't love, but so I was in a rare situation where I was in the high aptitude program. They put me on a bus and have me leave my school to go hang out with the other Smarty Pants kids. I think it was on Wednesdays. And then I would get bused back to my elementary school. And later that same day, I would take the special math class. Because when it came to creative writing, I would sit there and you'd have to pull me away from the desk. History, you'd have to pull my nose out of the book and I could memorize everything. Like I'd read a thing and be able to quote it back to the teacher. And then math, I mean, I'd drive back on the bus the same day and I'd be in the math class where, and I'm not disparaging it, I was in the class, where, but it would be like baseballs cost $2, a football costs $5.50.
Right.
How many of each do you have to buy for it to total $14 or whatever it was? And I'd sit there so frustrated and unable to do the math.
Yep.
And I'd be worked up. Sometimes I would cry. I'd go to the bathroom to cry because I wanted. And Mm-hmm. Here's a problem I have with my education experience. And I don't know if it, maybe some of it was on me, some of it was on the system back then. Maybe it's changed. What I never understood looking back on it was legitimately, why did I have to do math? And I ask that as a legitimate question. Because if they had told me, hey,
yeah,
in fourth grade, it was clear, I'm not going to pursue anything academic or professional ever that involves math. I look back, I've come to learn that there's actually like a version of dyslexia relating to math that I wonder if I have, because to this day, I can't do simple math in my head. Why don't they pull kids like me aside and go, yeah, you're the history and creative writing guy. Not going to make you worry as much. There's other stuff for you to do. Why can't they do that?
Well, I think because things might surprise you, you know, like I never thought that I was going to be, I mean, listen, I was like obsessed with reading when I was not as good in math. It didn't make as much sense to me. I could memorize stuff, which is why I did well until high school, because then I couldn't apply it to any higher math concepts.
Yeah, that critical thinking.
But, yeah, I couldn't do any of that because I was just memorizing. I was like, oh, you put the one up here? Okay. Now you add it to all of those? Okay, I can do that.
God,
and I can produce the right answer.
Stressing just hearing you say
I'm
carry
so
the one.
Sorry.
I'm like, oh, God, put the one up where? I don't know to this day where you put the one. Anyway, you go.
I will say, I think, you know, we teach math very, very, very different. And you'll see when your son goes through school, we teach math very differently. And I think a lot of parents are frustrated by it. That's mostly what I talk about when I have parent-teacher conferences is they're like, when I help my son or daughter with homework, I can't do it. So I just tell them the way that I do it. And then, you know, I'm just being very upfront. And I understand that because when I became a teacher, I had to relearn how to do all of that too. Because we teach it a very different way. It's a lot more focused on like number sense and manipulating numbers in different ways. I think it goes a little overboard sometimes. There's, you know, there has to be a some sort of a middle ground when it comes to the calculation. I mean, they do need to know how to calculate numbers, you know. But
I guess so. All right, I'll begrudgingly give it to you that it's good if kids know how to add.
I think so.
I'll begrudgingly admit it.
But also, if you asked me when I was in school what kind of a teacher I was going to be, I would have never said a math teacher ever, ever, ever. I would have said I want to be an ELA teacher because I love to read and that's like the world where I can be myself. But then I taught special ed math for 5 years, and I loved it. I love teaching math, and I think it's because I understand the kids who are like, this makes no sense to me, and I'm like, yeah, you're right, it doesn't. Let's make it make sense. So I
that's
think,
cool. I could have used I you.
Maybe,
I needed you. My whole life would have been different.
Well, and I think that's. The tides, I think that's the goal. And I know that there are a lot of parents that are frustrated with math and, oh my God, the Facebook posts about like, can you believe this? Look at how much less time it takes. It's like, yeah, but do you know what you're really doing? Were you able to apply any of that to, you know, algebra when you got to high school? Probably not. And, you know, it could have impacted me if I learned math this new way. Maybe it would have impacted my life in a different way. I don't know. But I know that I can help kids who don't get math understand it a little bit more.
Is this so, new way you talk about the one where I hear they got to touch their fingers together all the time? Isn't that a thing now?
No, that's touch math.
You touch your fingers and now you know how to divide?
That's a strategy.
I've heard about this.
It is a strategy that we use, but... Yeah, it's more of like breaking numbers down and manipulating them in different ways. And really, it gives you a better understanding of of what you're actually doing when you're multiplying, when you're dividing, when you're adding and subtracting. I feel like they get a better number sense. And also, again, with the human aspect, you got to understand that, you know what, sometimes you're not going to use it. And so, you know, you got to move on, and then you won't use it, and it's not going to, you know, make a difference.
I want to be clear. You said you need to teach kids what they're doing when they're multiplying and dividing. I knew what I was doing when I was multiplying and dividing. I was sweating through my clothes and having a panic attack. That's what I was doing. Every math test I took in seventh grade, the guy was the girl's soccer coach. And he was like a coach. He was always like, just tough it out. Every math test I had, I would have diarrhea. I would go to the bathroom. He thought I was cheating on my tests and hiding a math book in there. I'm like, no, this gives me so much anxiety that I get diarrhea every time. Oh, does anybody want to address that or help me as a kid? No, you're on your own. It's the wolves.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely, believe me, it's definitely very different than when even I went to school.
Yeah.
It is. It's a different environment. I think it is different. And
that's
there are
cool.
different challenges too.
And when you see, but, I have to imagine, when you see a kid who's scared of math like I was, or who is terrified to read a story they wrote because they're not the creative writing kid, and then by the end of the year, they love math, or they write a beautiful story that all the other kids like, and then they get to feel proud of that. That must be why you're like, this is why I hang up the projects when I should be going home on a Friday. That's got to be the best feeling.
Absolutely. It is the best. It is, you know, or like you, when they echo things that I've said to them, like I was having a really rough day and this kid brings this little index card up to me and she just gives it to me and then like goes and lines up. And it's just like this beautiful note about like, you work so hard and you really care about us and you're such a good teacher. And, I'm just really happy to be in fourth grade. It's just like, oh my God, what? Like this is what that is. If you could just bottle that and, you know.
Do you just quietly weep in that moment and then get that framed immediately?
Oh yeah. And then you bring them to special and then you openly weep in your classroom. because you know, it's just, I mean, listen, at the end of a Friday, many times you're weeping because of something like that or because of something else. I mean, it's a very emotional job for
and
me.
If I'm doing the math right, which again, I am probably not, but you've been teaching for 7 years, fourth grade. This means your first wave of kids is probably going to go off to college in the next year.
Well.
Or maybe you didn't always teach fourth grade.
Not exactly. Only because I didn't always teach fourth grade.
Got it.
Yeah. So I started off, but actually... Yeah, I think, so when I started off, I'm a general ed teacher now. I started off in special ed, and my first kids, I taught a fifth and sixth grade combined class. So this is the first year that I will have seniors graduating that I taught, which is, so I guess you're right, yeah. But it's kind of crazy. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, that's trippy.
Because it doesn't seem that long ago. It doesn't seem that long ago that I had them. You know, those memories are still very fresh. So, it's and they do like a walkout at the end of the year. They walk through a building, and we clap for them and all of the seniors that are going to graduate the high school that year. And it's going to be the first year that I actually know kids that are graduating. So it's mostly it makes me feel old. my sister, I come from a family of teachers. So my sister is also a teacher and she sent me a screenshot. One of her former students, she's a middle school teacher. One of her former students was running for council.
Ooh.
And I was like, oh, man. Ooh.
I can't vote for that. Can't vote for that kid. You couldn't even have. Listen, you're mind blown. We've been talking for over an hour.
Have we really?
Yeah, we're like a minute over already. This one flew by.
Oh, man. There are so many other things
I know.
Talk about.
Unfortunately, I had to ramble a lot about getting revenge on my sophomore year history teacher. So I'm sorry about that.
It's probably the best.
I do want to say a couple of things. First of all, thank you. Because despite all my blustery opinions on school, I know that the real deal teachers that are getting in there and rolling up their sleeves to help kids, that those are heroes and they're doing things the right way. And I rant about the bad experience because I'm an exaggerator, but I need to thank you and I need to thank all the other teachers out there doing things the right way. And like I said at the beginning, you're all criminally underpaid in the public schools. Your union is a good thing, not a bad thing. And I hope that you keep fighting the good fight. And let me thank you again sincerely. You offered a lot of perspective. I'm also so happy to hear a lot of the things that I'm bitter about from when I was a kid that you're like, no, we do things really differently. And most of all, North Jersey, baby,
yeah.
Go Yanks.
That's right. We also have a wellness period now in our schedule. So yay for mental health.
I would have loved that. Glad to hear it. Thank you for doing what
I
you
know.
Do.
All right. Thank you, Chris. It was so nice to talk to you.
I want to thank our teacher so much for filling us in. Sorry, guys, that I was so exhausted and rambled with some stories. I hope they entertained you, and I hope that we still managed to hear a lot about what life is like right now on the front lines of teaching. Also, wanted to plug a site. I learned about it. I did Stephen Colbert's show, and they give out gift certificates to this site that I've later contributed to on my own as well. It's called DonorsChoose.org. There are a lot of public schools that are so underfunded that teachers are actually responsible for buying their supplies. And when I say buying their supplies, I mean you can go on this site and find classrooms where the teachers say, please, we need pencils. We need markers that aren't dried out. We need an iPad. If we can get a used iPad to run education programs on, it would help these kids. DonorsChoose.org, I think, is such a well-intentioned site. You can find actual classrooms run by individual teachers in your town or your county, your neighborhood, where there are kids who need stuff and you can throw in a couple bucks and help them have literal notebooks, pencils, art supplies. So it's a site well worth checking out. Thank you so much for considering it. Thank you to our caller for calling. Thank you, Jared O'Connell in the booth. Thank you, Shell Shag, for the music. If you want to know more about me, chrisgeth.com. If you like the show, go to Apple Podcasts and rate, review, subscribe. It really, really helps when you do. And thank you so much for supporting the show.